Wednesday, November the 3rd, was a complete departure from our days of quiet. John Grunowski and his family were coming down for him to be sworn in as ambassador to Poland, and Larry O'Brien to be sworn in as postmaster general, in front of the highest door. But the morning dawned gray and misty. The plane would not be able to land at the ranch. They would have to land at Bergstrom and drive out. That would entail more than an hour's delay. And there were the 50 or so newspaper people arriving at our door in a few minutes. What would we do with them? Wait in the cars? Coffee in the hangar? It was finally decided that we'd open the doors and ask them in. Out of the rain, what else? So we reduced the size of the dining room table as small as it would go, shoved it against the window, the chairs against the wall, put out two enormous urns of coffee, and a steady stream of cookies traveled from oven to platter to table. Lyndon conducted a tour of the rooms. Eloise and Homer and I moved from group to group chatting, and finally 11 o'clock arrived, bringing the Washington visitors. First, John Grunowski was sworn in, standing in front of the fireplace, with his wife beside him, and Homer very dignified, with sonorous voice, administering the oath. Lyndon rearranged the two darling Grunowski children, Julie and Stacy. Now, wait a minute. Let's get these children in here. Get under that Bible, so you'll be in the picture. He invested the occasion with special significance, predicting that American relations with Eastern Europe are bright with hope, and disclosing that he planned to make some diplomatic appointments in the coming months, calculated to give the world a true picture of this country. He praised John Grunowski, said he was following in the footsteps of Justice Goldberg in taking on this new assignment, and said his mission is to build new bridges, not just to Poland, but to the people of Eastern Europe. He carries with him not only the official papers of an ambassador, but my great personal confidence as well. I could feel that he wanted to make it special for Grunowski, because to leave a cabinet post for an ambassadorship of less than the highest rank could well be considered a step down. But Grunowski is doing it with enthusiasm and grace. And then we all piled in cars and drove to High, where the post office is in a store with the red, white, and green gingerbread trim that Doug Kiker describes as so authentically a general store that it could serve as a movie set. The next hour was deliciously funny, nostalgia with a capital N. As one newspaper man wrote, President Johnson spun Cracker Barrel stories while cows bellowed beside the highway, and city boy Lawrence O'Brien joined the cabinet as postmaster general in a homespun front porch ceremony at a country store and post office. Across the street was the old gin where Lyndon had jumped in the cotton, and in an adjoining field he had played baseball with the 9 Dyke brothers. One of the brothers, Levi, is the current postmaster. As many of us as could gathered on the porch for the swearing-in, which amazingly included a line where the postmaster general promises to handle all monies faithfully and properly. Lyndon began his speech by saying that this was where he had mailed his first letter 54 years ago to his grandmother, and that Larry O'Brien was going out to try to find that letter and deliver it. This little community, he said, represents to me the earliest recollections of the America that I knew when I was a little boy. It was a land of farms and ranches and people who depended on those farms and ranches for a living. And that world is changing. But the price of progress must not be two Americas, one rural and one urban, or one northern and one southern, or one Protestant and one Catholic. Larry's coming here today, Lyndon said, reminds all of us in America that the large and the small are equally the concern of their government and of us all. He said he knew that Larry understood Boston, but he wanted to make sure that he also got the feeling and the understanding and the common touch of High as well. In the little crowd that had gathered in front of us, a baby babbled every few moments, a huge cattle truck roared by, and one or two carloads of surprised passers-by pulled over to the side of the road and got out to see what was going on here. When it was over, Lyndon said, let's all go inside and have some cheese and crackers. And then was my disappointing moment. I did not find the big wheel of cheese under a round box that I was expecting, but instead Velveeta and crackers wrapped in waxed paper. In his story, Doug Kiker said that the ceremony proved to be both charming and appropriate, and everybody had fun besides. I made sure that Mrs. Dyke and Mrs. Glidden, covering it for the Johnson City Record Courier, met the stars of the day. When everybody had shaken hands all around, I took Elva O'Brien and Mary Grunowski and their families, and we drove back by the house where Lyndon was born, and then to the ranch for Bloody Marys and beer, and presently into lunch. I was proud of the dinner table, our Mexican dishes and amber glasses, and the enchiladas I've been dreaming of since I started to reduce, with chili and pintos and tamales. Bill Moyers came in with Bill Lawrence, Cassie Mackey, and John Pumphrey, who joined us for lunch in the overflowing room. I had John Grunowski on my left and enjoyed very much hearing him talk about Poland and how it serves as a sort of listening post for what's going on in Red China. They recognize Red China and they recognize us. And every few months there's a confrontation between the Red Chinese ambassador and the American ambassador, which is a unique opportunity to try to pierce the wall of silence between us. He's studying Polish. His background as an economist heightens his excitement at this job. But our guests had been up since about 5 o'clock Texas time, and they were anxious to start the ride back. So as soon as lunch was over, we went out to the airstrip to bid them goodbye. And then Lyndon got Eloise and Homer, Bill Lawrence and Cassie, and I in a car with the top down. The rain had stopped, but the sky was lowering. And we drove around over the dance place, got stuck in a draw, and it took the muscles of two or three Secret Service men and considerable skill on Lyndon's part as driver to get us roaring up the opposite slippery bank, minus, I'm sure, a part of the underpinnings of the car. Back at the house, I went in for a nap. This morning, I'd slept until 8 o'clock. It's odd that in this quiet period, neither Lyndon nor I have slept very well. This was the latest and the best I'd slept since arriving. I had a short nap and then talked to Linda and to Lucy, signed mail and wrote notes, and then went in the living room and lit the fire, my most delightful companion. Lyndon had a long drive with Bill Moyers and the three newspaper people, and he brought them in for dinner. Relaxed, companionable, everybody in a good humor. In discussing foreign affairs, he said to one of them, Pumphrey, I believe, "The truth of the business is that this country is in trouble because we cannot make things any longer, bigger and better than other countries. We have put Germany and Japan back in business, and they are selling their heads off." At dinner, when Lyndon saw the spinach come in, brought by the Filipino waiter, he gave a grimace and said, "Do I have to eat that stuff again?" By his own orders, he's been having it for two meals every day. The little Filipino waiter, affable and anxious to please, but not understanding much English, hastily grabbed it up and said, "Tapioca?" We all roared with laughter. One word I am sure they are learning from their sojourn with Lyndon, and that is tapioca.
The other thing.
Lyndon's session with newspaper people, the sessions that he's had, have been very long and relaxed ones indeed. It was an early night. I was glad to end this full day by 10:30.